Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Participate in Command Officer Training, a highly interactive two-day pre-conference class at Firehouse World 2011 this February. Learn the skill sets necessary to be a successful command officer. Register before December 15th, and you'll also be included in pre-event webinars and classroom preparation. Complete details can be found at firehouseworld.com.
Welcome, brothers and sister firefighters. You're listening to Training and Tactics Talk. Training and Tactics Talk is real firefighters discussing current and hot and timely topics, focusing on the real issues as we take it to the street level. We want to focus on how we can improve our tactics and our trainings for a safer fire service because we want to ensure that everyone goes home. I'm your host, Douglas Klein. The topic for this show is going beyond status quo. And joining me on the show is a good friend and a fire service leader, spending 15 years as a member with the Wine and Skill Fire Department in North Greenbush, New York, and it's Tom LaBelle. And Tom has a rich history in the fire service, and he currently serves as a captain there. He's been assigned as a captain both to engine and truck companies. But Tom really goes beyond that. Tom is employed by the state of New York's Chiefs Association. He's been employed since 1995. He serves in director's capacity for that organization, and prior to doing that, he worked with the State Association of Fire Chiefs in New York, serving as the legislative director in the New York Assembly Subcommittee for Fire Protection Services. And he provides support in his role today for career and volunteer departments. And you got to know that an individual working in New York serves the nation's largest to the nation's smallest fire departments. He currently sits on the Fire Advisory Board for several corporations, and he is a very outspoken and predominant author, and he is passionate about the Fire Service Administration and firefighter safety. And his articles are both in print and online, and just does a tremendous job of leading and guiding the fire service in a lot of aspects. And Tom, being a good friend, it's good to have you on, and it's so good to know that we're going to talk about a subject that I know is near and dear to your heart.
It's great to be here.
When we start talking about status quo, I know that in some of your writings and some of your articles, and especially your leadership for the state of New York and the fire service as a whole, because you're involved far beyond the state of New York, you're impacting the nation's fire service just tremendously, and a lot of work that you've been involved with and some of the legislation that's come out, some of the concepts and some of the ideas. And that in itself is going beyond the status quo, because we know that status quo basically is talking about maintaining or keeping things the way that they presently are. It means that we stop developing when we go to status quo. We stop progressing. We stop advancing. We become sluggish or dull, you know, to the point that pretty much we become foul and odor or somewhat dead. So, Tom, let's talk a little bit about your thoughts about status quo and some of the things that you've done. So take it away.
One of the beautiful things, one of the things I think I love, and I know you do and others do as well, and that's the history, the rich history of the fire service across this country, and the history and the tradition. But the old joke goes, you know, that it's the fire service, 200 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. And it used to be that we could get away with that. And, you know, we were talking before about the concept that sort of getting out of the status quo, getting out of the box, as you will. And you can think of the box as both the world we live in, sort of the policies we have to deal with, all the things we face nowadays, whether it's Facebook communications or SOPs, SOGs, all the way up to the boxes of building itself that we have to fight fire in. And the reality is if we don't keep up with those changes, as you said a few minutes ago, not only do you become a dead organization, if you're not careful, you can be a dead firefighter, which obviously is something we're all striving to make sure doesn't happen, or certainly doesn't happen with the frequency that that we've seen in the past. It's very easy. We're just simply not known as proactive. We're getting better with it. It's great to see the fire service getting involved with code enforcement like never before, with the ICC and fire sprinkler initiatives and private dwellings are all positive things going in the right direction. But what amazes me is the speed with which all the things around us change. And if there are some of us who felt that we weren't changing enough 10, 15 years ago, the speed of life has changed so much now, it's somewhat daunting to think about how fast we're going to have to start changing.
Well, you're absolutely correct. The change has definitely, you know, brought us forward. We think about that tradition you just talked about, which is brotherhood, and it's the honor and the courage and the protection, the fortitude, the duty to get done what we need to get done, to take it to the level. It's not just something you do. It's something that you are. But we can't get hung up in the past. We can't get hung up on, you know, just focused on never changing. We've got to have visionary leadership. It's got to be vision-oriented. So what's going on, or what's your thoughts about how do we get to this vision-oriented leadership that's going to keep us out of that stagnant state that we have a tendency to easily fall into?
Well, I think your terminology of vision is probably dead on. If we take a look at some of the leadership writing that we see both in our industry and outside, one big author is Stephen Covey in The Seven Habits of Effective Leadership. And he talks in that book about the tendency of what he calls see, do, get. You see something, you do something, you get a response from it. And the C part, the vision, is where we, I think, sometimes in the fire service sort of get bogged down in, that we have a very difficult time seeing and understanding where we want to go. We're not always known, unfortunately, for being visionary. But I think it is possible to do. It's a habit. It's something you learn to do. It's something that with practice, again, sort of that see, do, get, we're able to do it. And the reality is, if you just take a look at firefighting, you know, if you get enough opportunity, if you get enough experience, you see a building, you establish a strategy, certain tactics and tasks, and you carry those out, and you get a response to it. Unfortunately, that's a really tough way to learn. I joke all the time that I learned through bruising, your bruises, my bruises, but I'd prefer they were your bruises. But that vision of learning how to see where you really want to go, and don't get confused between process and goal. I remember talking to a fire department one time. They were going through their SOPs and SOGs, and they had one that they'd had literally forever since the fire department had been in vision. And every night at 7:30, the fire department had to get a fresh bucket of water and wash off the wheels of each one of the apparatus. And they needed to use a fresh bucket of water for each piece of apparatus. So finally somebody buckled down and went through and figured out. And it was from back in the days when the horses drew the wagons. And they had to clean off the wheels at the end of the day. But they just kept doing it. Until finally someone asked the big question is why are we doing what we're doing? What's the goal at the end of the day? If the goal is to save lives and property, if we keep our eye on that, if we keep saying to ourselves, okay, we're doing to do a drill tonight, and our primary goal is protecting lives and property, you know, our lives, their lives, their property, our property, and we keep our focus on that vision, we're going to be a lot better off. But that's not always the tendency, as you all know.
Exactly. When I think about something, Chief Goldfeder did just a stellar presentation of the beat goes on at FDIC. And you look back over and you see line of duty deaths and you compare. As of November the 11th of this year, since 1999, there was 1,620 deaths. Now, that number has gone up over the last 8 days by several. So when do we say enough is enough? Does it have to be an acceptable part of our job when we talk about leadership? Do we need to get hit in the head by a brick wall to get this picture or to figure out where we're at and what's going on with true basic leadership, that we've got to change how we do some business? Well, and where do we make change at? How do we make change, Tom?
I think one of the issues, and this is true, I think, probably with all change, and that means accepting some personal responsibility. And it doesn't matter whether you're the brand new firefighter, whether you're the seasoned veteran. It's very easy, and I don't think it happens just in the fire service. I think we're seeing it more and more in society, where people just assume that somebody else is going to take care of business. I know that for me, I get to visit a lot of firehouses. If I walk into a firehouse and there's a candy wrapper on the floor, that tells me a lot about that firehouse, especially if there are other people there and they don't pick it up when they know company's in their own house. That's just says oodles about that firehouse. And I think the same can be said for personal safety. I think there are a lot of firefighters, fire officers, chief officers and commissioners out there who just sort of say, okay, we're going to plug in the following, mathematical formula, and that way I really don't have to worry about firefighter safety because we're just going to employ the same mathematical formula every single time and everyone will be safe. And they're trying to take themselves off the hook. They're trying not to take responsibility for the action. And then on the flip side, you've got folks who either hide behind the fact that, well, geez, we don't have enough money, or we don't have enough personnel, or we don't have enough this, that, or the other thing. Now, don't get me wrong. If you haven't got enough personnel, volunteer or career, there are certain things you're just not going to get accomplished, or you're not going to accomplish quickly enough. But don't train like you're showing up with 35 people if you're only showing up with 10. Don't be purchasing equipment that you don't know how to use. Once you purchase it, that isn't what makes you an expert. Taking a little personal responsibility, digging in, going to trade shows, reading the magazines. You don't even have to get the magazine sent at home. I mean, Firehouse and others just will obviously, they'll post it on the website. You can get a lot of information just, listening to programs like this, getting on the websites and learning a lot. But comes back to us understanding what we're supposed to be doing, having a little personal responsibility, being willing to speak up when we see something that's not going well. That sort of, again, I think you mentioned it before, that sort of vision of seeing what we're supposed to be doing, and then, quite frankly, just getting the courage to do it, the courage to be safe.
Well, that's a good point. And you started talking a little bit about training, and, of course, that's just something that I'm passionate about and I want to jump in on here. We need to have some vision-oriented training. But the first thing I want to think about in status quo, how many folks do you think are still teaching the same stuff that they had 10 years ago, that they just pull out of the file cabinet, they pull out of the computer, and they show up one night, it hasn't been adjusted, there's nothing new, and they begin teaching?
Well, I think you and I and a lot of folks would say that the day you stop learning is the day to go home. And the same is true for instructors. You need to, as an instructor, be learning something new every single day that you're bringing back to your programs that you're doing. So you're absolutely right. If you're pulling that same old program out every single time and you haven't put a little effort into learning what's going on in your community, learning what's going on in your state, learning what's going on in the country, and learning what's going on in the industry, and then applying that in what you're teaching, then you're going to start to get behind exponentially. I mean, it's not that you're just going to miss one thing. Each of those changes grows dramatically because, again, the world's moving at such an incredible pace that it's personal responsibility. If I'm going to go out as an officer in my fire department, or if I'm going to go out on behalf of the New York State Association of Fire Chiefs and do a program, I got to spend a little time looking things up. I've got to spend a little time doing my research. I've got to spend a little time knowing that the brothers and the sisters that I'm going out to impart some knowledge in got my best that night. And that's my responsibility. If they're willing to take the time to come and learn, then I have to have that responsibility. I have to take the time to think about where is it that we want these folks to go? What is it we want them to learn? What's the vision? How do we break them out of that same old, same old? And by the way, and I know everybody listening, if you're going to the firehouse or you're going to your county meeting or whatever way you're getting your training, and you're listening to that same training program for the umpteenth time, you're not learning anything. And then they start shutting down, and then you lose respect, and then it really becomes stagnant. So I think you're dead on that they have to do that. So I think your real question, though, is how do we get them to do it? Part of it is sometimes standing up and asking questions. I go absolutely nuts. I'll go out to do an educational program, and we'll do a presentation, and you say, okay, you know, are there any questions? And people are looking at you. And I like to go out into the group and sit right down next to somebody, which they're always mortified when I do, and say, you can't tell me you don't have any questions about this. Everybody's got a question about it. Because if you don't have a question, I didn't do my job. If I've pushed your brain a little farther than it was when I got here today, there's no way there's not a question behind that. Questions aren't something to be ashamed of. Questions aren't some, as an instructor, people asking me a question, there's nothing to be ashamed of on my part. There's nothing to be ashamed of on their part. The learning experience, I think, particularly in the fire service, is a shared experience. And so how do you find that courage to get outside of the box? How do you find that courage to broaden your vision, look a little bit beyond where you're at, and drag people along with you? And how do you find that courage as an individual sort of sitting there in the audience? You know, I'm sure you've been in the exact same spot where you're doing the program and then you sort of look out into the crowd and again you're asking, okay, who's got a question? And I just wish sometimes I could convince that young firefighter who's thinking to himself, I'm going to look like a fool if I ask a question. I don't want to ask a question. If I can just get through to him to say, you know what, bud? There are 30 other guys in this room that have the exact same question you do. They just don't have the courage to ask it. Come on, ask it. Because now it gets fun. I mean, anybody who's had a good coffee table experience, you know, of talking about a particular event or a new piece of equipment, when everybody gets involved in the conversation, that's about as far as I'm concerned, that's about as good as short of out in the field, hands-on training. That's about as good as things get.
And we know that. That's a very important piece when it comes down to it. And training plays the key component. That's the thread that binds everything in our business. And it doesn't matter whether you're a career, volunteer, in a combination department, it doesn't matter. It's the common thread that binds, because there are certain components that have to be trained on. There are certain knowledges, there are certain predicated skills, knowledges, and abilities that have to be there. So how do we get people interested in training or going beyond status quo in training? And how do we get some of this delivery out there that keeps the program from being status quo?
Well, two things. One, and you hit on it, and I think it's incredibly important, and that is, you know, skills, knowledge, and abilities. There's a tendency to think that, okay, I'm a brand new firefighter. This is the training I need to have. And then you move up and you become, you know, whatever it's called in the communities of the people that are listening, you become a senior firefighter. And those skill sets change, start heading maybe towards NFPA Firefighter 2 level curriculum. And then you start moving up into the fire officer level. And the skill sets that you need as you move through change. But there's a tendency, because I think you and I would both admit, the fun stuff tends to be that stuff we learned early on, certainly the stuff at the Firefighter 2 level is a lot of fun to do. I mean, You know, forcible entry is great. Ventilation is great. Hose line advance, that's all fun stuff. Go out, sweat a little, learn a little, you know, bump around a little, but that's a lot of fun stuff. But one of the things that happens as you move up through the organization is you absolutely positively need to recognize what that next skill set is you have to have. And if you need a different skill set as a captain, when you become captain, you need to already have them, or you at least know that you need them and start to work on that. So as we're moving up through our careers, volunteer or paid, but our careers in the fire service, we need to think about, well, you know, I'd like to have a bugle on my collar. Well, then you need to start thinking about what that job means. And you can't stop working on your basic skills, but you need to start looking at some of your managerial skills. Well, now we start to transition from what people want to what people need. And that's where I sort of transitioned personally from my role in my fire department to my role at the state chiefs, and getting folks to actually go and do the things that they should do is always harder than giving them what they want. You know, figuring out how you get a little sugar in with the medicine, if you will. And part of it is that the folks at the very top of the organizational chart, they need to be leaders themselves. And there's a tendency to say, well, okay, if I came up through this fire department and I needed to have, you know, the following 15 classes, then the guys coming up behind me, that's all they need to. They don't need any more than me. And sometimes there's a belief, I truly believe this, that sometimes there's the belief that if I've only got, you know, these 15 classes and I was allowed to be a chief officer, or I've only got this certification and I can be a chief officer, how dare I ask the folks below me to have more than I do? It's not even that you're necessarily going to feel that they're better than you. It's just, how do I ask them to do more? If I didn't have to do more, how can I ask them to do more? But the reality is you can ask them to do more. The reality is you have a moral imperative to ask them to do more. How do you make your organization better if you're not pushing everyone to the edge of the envelope, to outside the box, to the edge of their comfort level? I mean, we do that when we're training recruits. You know, you take a look at a student, you take a look at a probationary member, and you say, okay, you know, they're having problems with ladders, let's say they're not comfortable climbing ladders. Well, that's what I'm going to work on. If they're doing a great job climbing ladders, but for some reason, you know, they just can't seem to not trip themselves up when they're stretching a line, well, guess what? I'm going to take you off ladders a little bit and have you work on stretching a line a little bit more. Well, okay, now you're a lieutenant, and you're great at stretching line, and you're great at ladders, and you gave me a really great size up, but you're doing a terrible job talking to people. You're just not, you don't have good interpersonal skills. Well, isn't it my responsibility as a leader within that organization to say, how do I find this guy what he or she needs to be better at that specific skill set that they need? And even if I never had to go do it, they're going to be a better person for it. And then this, in my mind, is the really interesting thing. If you're a good leader and you find that person and you help them do the thing that's going to make them a stronger officer, even if they don't want to do it initially, but you get them to do it, they're going to love you for it. They're absolutely going to love you for it. And if they don't want to do it, well, then do you really want them moving up within your organization? So I think a lot of it, again, goes back into your own personal responsibility as a leader, looking at the folks, quote-unquote, below you on the organizational chart, and taking the time to get to know them, taking the time to get to learn their strengths and weaknesses, and then taking them by the hand and walking them through the process of whatever it is they specifically need to be better members of the fire department, better officers, better leaders, what have you. And you ask any really good chief of department, and we know who they are, and you say, gee, boy, chief, you're doing an amazing job. And Doug, I know you'll agree with me. They'll all say they're surrounded by really good people.
Oh, absolutely.
How did they get surrounded by really good people? It wasn't that they just hired them and they were already good. They helped them be good people. And that kind of an organization where you've got your people jazzed up about being there and they're learning things and they're expanding their minds and their potential, that organization can't help but get better.
And you're absolutely on the head. Training is that thread that binds, and we've got to be planning this out. We've got to have a strategic plan for training. We've got to be focused on this at a really high discipline. And that brings us to a good point to take a break. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about creating some change in your organization and seeing exactly what roads we can go down and kind of tying all this back together again and putting you on that pathway. So you're listening to Training and Tactics Talk, and we'll be back right after this.
With a tough economy, everyone can use a break when it comes to training and education, especially firefighters. In addition to early reg discounts, Firehouse World 2011 is offering a new group discount for conference packages. Register with just three people and you'll save 10% per person. Groups of six or more will save 20% per person. Firehouse, affordable for everyone. Get complete details at firehouseworld.com.
Well, welcome back. You're listening to Training and Tactics Talk. I'm Douglas Klein, your host. With me on the show today is Tom LaBelle, the Executive Director for the New York State Fire Chiefs Association, and we're talking about going beyond status quo and how do we keep from getting stagnant. And when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about training, and we want to create some change in our organization. And I think the first place we start is desire. And desire is that deep down passion that just drives you to want, to really just need or feel the need to make something happen. And we have to have that desire, that passion in everything we do in the fire service, or it's just going to kind of be hung up with status quo. And once we get to that point, it takes some discipline. And that's the second D, is discipline. And when we think about discipline, it's the discipline to sit down and develop. And that's something we don't like to do very often. And I know, Tom, you can talk about this a little further, because discipline is something that we've got to do when it comes to training. We need to be developing some good plans and looking at all levels of our people and looking at these long-term five-year plans for training. So talk a little bit about that, Tom. Maybe give us some examples of things you've seen with successful organizations, and it doesn't have to be just New York. You can, you know, your boundaries are far beyond that.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
All right. You know, I think really the first half of our conversation was all about desire, and you're dead on. Oftentimes what happens in fire departments is that you'll get a core group of individuals who have the desire to move the organization forward, but they don't necessarily have the ability, or they don't feel they have the ability to put together the plan. Or you'll have a chief officer or a cadre of fire officers who are ready to do something, and they're excited about doing it, but they never truly plan it out. And they don't have, as you say, the discipline to carry out the rest of that process. And the best thing to do is to go back and take a look, a real hard look. And again, look equals vision. Take a really hard look at what it is my organization truly does. I mean, I can travel all over the country, and you'll go past building after building that says fire department on it. And, you know, I'd like to say there are buildings with fire trucks in them, and there are fire departments. They may all say fire departments on them, but they're not all fire departments. And what separates them is a true understanding of what it is I do as an organization. So, you know, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but obviously fire suppression is part of it. Technical rescue, at least vehicle extrication, maybe EMS, maybe hazmat, certainly at the awareness level. Taking a look at each one of those responsibilities at the task level, and then taking a look at, okay, what's the managerial part of what we do, and start outlining what it is that's going to help us achieve those goals effectively, and obviously a large part of effective is safe. Once I know what it is I do, once I know what those different parts are, then I can take a look at training. And it's really not that difficult. At the end of the day, The NFPA standards list out the job performance requirements for just about everything we do. Now, are those JPRs going to cover everything? No. Are they an excellent base to take a look at what it is we want to be able to do? Absolutely. They're a great base. And for guys who don't know what a JPR is, the NFPA defines job performance requirements. So, you know, a firefighter ought to be able to, you know, stretch a hose line this much, this far. They ought to be able to identify the following tools. They ought to be able to force open a door, and they ought to be able to do this, 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 and this. So if you're a brand new leader in your fire department, if you're a brand new training officer, and you're trying to figure out how you get your head and hands around that training program, that's a great place to start looking. What it is my folks ought to be able to do, what are the benchmarks for what they ought to be able to do. And again, the really interesting thing for me is the vast majority of folks who show up at our doorsteps, they want to be good. I mean, they've got the desire. They want to be firefighters, and they want to be good firefighters. And so if you're able to turn around to them and say, listen, we've looked this stuff up, we took a look at it, we're not just sort of pulling this out of thin air. This is what it is, this is how we're supposed to be able to do it, and this is how we're going to get you from point A to point B. Not only is it easier to get the buy-in of the folks we're going to be training, it's also easier to get the buy-in of the folks above us in the organizational structure, all the way up to the city council or the board of fire commissioners or whatever organization it is that oversees your fire department. So we take a step back, we take a look at what we're truly doing, then we lay out a plan. You're not going to get it done overnight. You know, it's not going to be done in one fell swoop. But you can start dividing it up into reasonable chunks of time based on what it is you do, how often you drill, how often you learn. And then you can also start providing information. I mean, how easy is it nowadays if you're going to do a drill on forcible entry? How easy is it nowadays to really quickly get online, find an article, print it out, maybe drop it in the gear locker of the folks in the fire department? Hey, we're going to be working on forcible entry. Here's a quick something for you guys to look at so we hit the ground running when you show up on drill night. Or even in a career department, just throwing it in their locker for the shift and giving them a chance to take a look at it. And everybody's sort of on the same page as we move forward. The same can be true, and we talked about this a little while ago, that if we want to push our leaders to have greater vision, the same can be true for taking a look at the job performance requirements at that level. I am amazed, and it happens both within New York State and outside of New York State. I've had conversations with folks from all over the U.S., and I'll ask them, I'll say, okay, you know, you're a fire department. What gave you the authority to leave your firehouse with a piece of fire apparatus today? And they'll say, excuse me? And I'll say, well, was the local law passed? Are you in the municipal charter? How do you get to be there? And they'll say, well, I don't know. And I am shocked that in this day and age, we would respond with huge emergency vehicles, with lights and sirens, and the leaders in the fire department can't even tell you how they have the authority to do that. And the reason is because they don't always know what their job performance requirement is. And guess what? It's not forcible entry anymore. It's understanding your organization. It's moving your people forward. Those JPRs are also listed out in NFPA. And it's easy enough to find that information. And really here at with the New York State Fire Chiefs, that's the direction we're heading in, is, you know, we'll do a program that has a little bit of, you know, some flashy fire scenes in it. But we're trying with greater and greater frequency to push people to that next level of thought process, that next level of learning, send them in a different direction. You talk about thinking outside the box and shifting the paradigms, you know, how we look at the world. Yeah, I can go up to a lot of really good fire officers at various ranks, really good firefighters. And I'll ask them, what's the last book you read? And they'll say, well, I was reading a book on firefighting, and I was reading a book on fire tactics, and I was reading a book on fire strategies. I go up to a really great fire officer, they're reading a book that has nothing to do with firefighting. they're getting outside of our own industry, reading other managerial books, other books about leadership, other books about being a good person, being a good leader, being a good organizer, and they're thinking outside the box. They're thinking outside the status quo. There's a lot of great stuff out there, but you've got to break yourself out of the cycle before anybody else can do it for you.
Absolutely, and that's where the next two pieces come in, which is determination and dedication. And it's seeing the events through, doing the blood, sweat, and tears to make sure that what you set forth to accomplish gets done, seeing the pain through, making sure that you get accomplished what you truly want to get accomplished. You were talking about reading in books. There are two outstanding books that I think every fire officer ought to read. The first one is Outstanding, 47 Ways to Make Your Organization Exceptional. It's by John Miller. The other one that I just dearly love, it's got some great quotes in it, and it's what every leader truly does need to know, and it's Attitude 101 by John C. Maxwell. Two great books for officers, and neither one of them have to do anything with the fire service, but they have everything to do with the fire service.
Absolutely.
And let's talk a little bit about dedication. What's it take in today's culture to be beyond status quo with dedication?
Well, you touched on it a minute ago. If we take a look within our own organizations, we'll talk about someone who's disciplined. We'll talk about someone who has integrity. And we all like the guy or girl in our fire department who has integrity. And then you ask somebody, say, okay, well, define integrity for me. It's a hard thing to define. I mean, we know it when we see it, but it's kind of hard to put your finger on. But for the most part, it's, the most common feedback we get is doing what you say and saying what you do. And that takes discipline. It's very easy to get caught up in the moment. It's very easy to say, well, I'll take the easy path. I won't have any, a friend of mine who led the officer training down in New York City used to say, any interpersonal discomfort. It's much easier to be the nice guy. But the reality is, when we think about really good officers, we didn't want them to be the nice guy. You know what? I want mom and dad to be mom and dad. I don't want mom and dad out hanging around with me. I want mom and dad making sure I get to bed on time, making sure I get fed well, making sure I go to school, get good grades, what have you. Well, we want the same thing out of our leaders. So that discipline of taking the time to do the right thing, and one of the really interesting things, as far as I'm concerned, the gifts that God gives us, is that little split moment between stimulus and decision, that little brief moment of time where somebody does something, some action happens, and you actually have the ability, and if you're lucky, you've got the discipline to think about what the right thing to do is and do that right thing. And even though you may think it's going to be uncomfortable, most people are shocked at how people positively respond to other folks who do the right thing. And if we just think about it, we know that person in our own fire department who we say, he always seems to do the right thing. It's because he stopped. He or she thought about it, and they have the discipline to do the right thing. And I had a wise Irish grandmother who used to tell me all the time, she said, Tom, the right thing is not hard to figure out. If you're trying to figure out the right thing to do, it's the hard thing to do. And that's what it takes. But at the end of the day, I would rather stay out a little longer, drill a little harder, have the guys and members maybe gripe a little bit because we're getting back a little bit later, but know darn well that on the next call, we're going to nail it and that I'm not going to have to visit somebody's home. I'm not going to have to go visit somebody in the hospital. I'm not, or Shaq, going to have to make that absolutely, which I never have had to do and hope I never have to do, stop by the house and tell somebody that they're never coming home again. So that level of discipline is achievable, but it's something you practice. It's not something that happens automatically. It's training. It's doing the right thing as consistently as possible, No one does it right every single time. Everybody makes mistakes.
And that is so, so true. And for our listeners, if you're looking for a good training plan or a calendar, just a few months ago, we actually did a segment on Training and Tactics Talk about developing calendars and good training schedules. And there's actually one available on the firehouse.com website attached to that podcast that you can go in and download, and you can actually tweak it and move it around to fit your organization. So there are tools that we have out there for you to work with. Well, let's shift gears a little bit here, Tom, and let's start talking about, and we've mentioned this and we skirted around it, attitude. And, of course, this is something that I've been writing about quite a bit and speaking about quite a bit. And, of course, if you go to my Facebook page, you're going to see attitude quotes and leadership quotes that pop up just about every day. I think it's phenomenal. To put these, to me, they're inspirational personally. And I hope that it's inspiring some of the fire folks that are out there as well. But we know that if we're going to change the culture, we got to change the attitude. And, you know, that's going to be difficult. And we know that attitude is individual empowerment. And it may be the only difference between success or failure. And we know that as groups of people come in, especially, you know, athletic teams that play above their level, it's all about attitude, and that's how they get successful. So let's talk a little bit about changing that culture and what it's going to take to change your attitudes. And I know that you've seen a multitude of attitudes across the United States, and I know they exist in New York just from having the opportunity to travel up there and be around in different parts of the states, and it's drastically different. No matter where you go in the state, you're going to see different attitudes. So talk a little bit about that for us, Tom.
Absolutely, and as you suggest, it's true here in the state. It's true nationally. Again, though, I think a lot of the attitude comes back to personal responsibility and our attitude towards our profession. Again, whether you're a volunteer or career, how you act professionally, your attitude towards training, your attitudes towards your subordinates, your attitude towards your peers, and your attitudes towards your superiors, although some people chafe at that. I tell people all the time that the reason you call the chief chief is because you never want them to forget what their responsibility is. The reason you call the captain is you never want that person to forget that they have a responsibility to you as a firefighter. And attitude is so contagious. It can be cancerous. That candy wrapper I talked about earlier. If we go into a fire department and I get times when I'll get a phone call and fire chief will ask me to stop by because they're having a problem, and I'll tell them, throw a candy wrapper on the floor. Let people know I'm coming to the firehouse. Throw a candy wrapper on the floor intentionally where no one sees you do it, but have them there when I walk in. And if nobody picks up that candy wrapper, they've got an attitude problem in that fire department, and it's problematic. And if that attitude isn't taken care of before you try to take care of these other training issues, it's going to be not impossible, but it's going to be an awful lot harder to take care of those other leadership and training issues. So sometimes that negative attitude can be towards an individual. Sometimes that attitude can even be about the organization you belong in. But at the end of the day, the attitude I have, and this goes back to before when we were talking about that little space and time where I get to have a decision, belongs to me. And once I realize that I own my own attitude, if Doug, you and I run into each other someplace and I say, hey, Doug, how's it going? And you say, oh, my gosh, you know, this is terrible and this is terrible and this is terrible and I hate this and I'm negative, negative, negative. If I then add on to your negative attitude, if I become negative too, that's my choice to do it. That's not your choice. I'm not going to let you make those choices for me. I refuse to do it. Tom LaBelle's in charge of Tom LaBelle. Doug Klein's in charge of Doug Klein. And in that little space, I can choose to have a positive attitude or I can choose to have a negative attitude. And so when that other person walks in the firehouse with a chip on their shoulder, I can let them bring me down or I cannot. And people want to be around other people with positive attitudes. My anybody who reads my articles and stuff, I talk about my kids all the time, and I made the incredibly foolish mistake of paying for my children to go to Taekwondo and get their black belts. I mean, teaching your children how to beat you up is not the smartest thing in the world, and then have to pay for it on top seems just insult to injury. But I look at young people going into that class. I look at young people on my son's football teams. I look at young people in scouting. I'm involved in scouting. And the ones that walk in and maintain a positive attitude, other people gravitate to them. They automatically gravitate to them. But if they don't see that person with a positive attitude and there's somebody with a really strong negative attitude, guess what? They'll gravitate over to them too. So as a leader, walking in, having a positive attitude, helping other folks have a positive attitude as well, becomes contagious with the passage of time and makes that other issue much easier to deal with, that issue of training, that issue of looking outside the box.
And we see that as well. Attitudes drastically make the difference, and I think it makes a difference when we get on the fire scenes, whether we make, you know, what we call aggressive decisions and sound aggressive decisions, or whether we become reckless. And that's kind of that fine line. And it's been defined. Chris Nahm and I have kind of defined a term called just basically tactical entertainment. We do some things because we think it's really fun and it's the cool stuff to do, but in reality, just how smart is it? What type of attitude are we bringing to the table? And I know we talk about this when we're talking about the rules of engagement, because our world has changed in the fire service. It's not like it was 20 years ago. We've got different building constructions. We've got, you know, extreme fire behavior. We've got just some dynamics that have drastically changed that our attitudes have to change. And it's definitely going to dictate whether we have success or failure. One quote that comes to mind comes from the great coach Lou Holtz, and it talks about attitude. And I remember being told this back my senior year of high school, and we were playing, and I mean, we went undefeated, you know, during the season, and just for years it was beating in our head. How you respond to the challenge in the second half will determine what you become at the end of the game. And that always stuck out to me, is what you're going to become at the end of the game. And finally, the senior year, after having three losing seasons, underneath that quote was put to finish it out, whether you are a winner or whether you're a loser. And we think about it, if we have just a small error in what we do in our operations, if we just have just a little error, what's the best that we can hope for? That's just somebody gets hurt, not killed.
Absolutely.
That's not good.
No.
So we have to take this, and this is for our officers listening. When you're in charge, take charge. Take charge with a very positive attitude, with desire and discipline and determination and dedication to go beyond status quo, to make things better, because there's those opportunities that are out there. It's just phenomenal what's available to you, and resource-wise, just to make things happen for a positive fire service. And we so desperately need that. We need to have those powerful learning experiences every single day when we're, you know, in the fire service. It's just drastic. And I love your comment about the attitudes of how it shows up. And John Maxwell talks about that attitude in Attitude 101, just things that come out that just I truly, truly love. And he hits the nail on the head, and he really comes back and reiterates a couple things you said, Tom, and I really want to share this with our listeners, is that the attitudes that you have impact all individuals, whether it's positive or negative. It impacts your leadership. And at the end of the day, it determines whether or not you keep climbing, whether or not you have success or failure.
Absolutely.
So in the closing here, Tom, go ahead and wrap us up a little bit and kind of recap and give us your final thoughts here.
There's a great book, Man Searching for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, and he was a physicist, and he was actually in a Nazi concentration camp. And he tells this one story where one of the other prisoners comes up to him and says, "You're always smiling. Why are you smiling?" And he realized, he said, when they've taken away everything else, what they can't take away is my control of myself, that I'm in charge of myself. And that's leadership. And that's, once you finally understand that, that little space between, where you're at and what you want to be and how you want to react to things, that's where all these other leadership things come about, as far as I'm concerned. And that if you want to make a better fire department, if you want to get ahead of the curve, and obviously, you know, the old saying is, if you're reacting to the fire, you know, if you think you're keeping pace with the fire, it's beating your butt and you just don't know it yet. If you want to keep out ahead of everything that's going on around, you need to realize that you're in charge of yourself. You're in charge. If you're a firefighter, if you're a line officer, if you're a chief officer, you're in charge of moving yourself forward and moving your organization forward. And only by grabbing that level of self-control are you going to be able to move your organization forward and think outside the box and get out of the paradigm that of 200 years unimpeded by progress.
Well, let's just give you an opportunity here. I know the New York Chiefs have a conference coming up this summer. It's a great officer chief conference. Just tremendous speakers come in, tremendous programs. Give it a little plug and some dates for us, Tom.
Well, I appreciate it. We do, we call it Fire Industry Rescue Expo. It's held every June, and it's held at the Turning Stone Resort in Central New York, in Oneida, New York. We're going to have about 31 speakers coming in this year. We'll have about 250 to 280 exhibitors at this point. We have folks come in from Canada and all over the country, and it's a really great time, really enjoyable. This coming year, it is June 15th through the 18th, and anyone who's more than welcome to come. If you want to come walk the exhibit floor, tickets are free for that. If you want to come see the education, and if you come every day for education, you'll end up seeing about 15, 16 speakers. That's about $85.
And also, the same time that your conference is going on, the Southeast Association of Fire Chiefs will be having their 83rd annual leadership conference. And it's not just for chiefs, just like your conference is not just for chiefs, it's for everyone. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge to be gained at these conferences. And the Southeast Chiefs Leadership Conference is in Montgomery, Alabama. It's June 16th through 18th. And again, we're going to have a large vendor floor as well. There is a firefighter combat challenge in that area going on. We're looking to have a large venue of education as well, focused on developing excellence in you and your organization is the theme. And we're actually doing, you know, something a little different. We're getting some key vendors involved with some of the changes in the fire service. And, you know, they're going to be in some roundtable sessions as well, talking about the new NFPA standards that are affecting, like, wildland apparatus and fire ambulances and things of that nature. So we've got that. We've got a great venue. Jack Perro, the ISC president, is going to be a keynote speaker for us. Lots of good education. For folks that are in training, I want to encourage you to take a look at the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. If you go to www.isfsi.org, that's another area that you can tie into with just tons of resources to help bring that excellence to your training, to help, you know, raise that bar, so to speak. So just a lot of information there. Tom, I want to thank you for being on the show. It's great to have a colleague like you in our Northeast and all the work that you're doing. I'm just tremendously proud of your efforts and what's going on there.
Well, it was absolutely my pleasure. And I hope everybody has a great holiday season, a safe holiday season. And just because the weather gets cold doesn't mean it's time to stop training.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, it's always good, and our hats go off to Pete Matthews, who helps us out with Training and Tactics Talk, and our producer, Danny. And again, I want to echo the same thing, is we need to have a fire-safe winter. A lot of things happen, and you know, be focused and diligent on making sure everyone goes home. You've been listening to Training and Tactics Talk, brothers and sister firefighters. We're excited for the next show to come up next month. We're going to expand on this topic and actually start diving into some other realms of how to go beyond status quo. And we're going to get down to some really nitty-gritty type topics and get, you know, into those timely topics that we need to focus on. Again, you're listening to Training and Tactics Talk. We look forward to seeing you at our next show.
Firehouse is live. Video and audio training is now available at firehousetraininglive.com. Access the best of Firehouse events at your convenience for an affordable price. From communications to mass casualty to strategy and tactics, Firehouse Training Live can be used by volunteer, paid, and combination departments of all sizes. Get complete details at firehousetraininglive.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.